Please be advised that the opinions and views expressed by Richard Martin of
GF Investment Services, LLC
are entirely his own and do not necessarily represent the views of the company, its affiliates, or its officers. Any investments based on Richard Martin's comments are unsolicited by the company and are at the sole risk and prejudice of the listener and the investor.
Nice to be back with you once again, ladies and gentlemen, on Friday, this 8th day of May in the year 2015. I am Richard Martin, coming to you from Southeast Asia. Well, it seems hard to believe that your government is purposely recreating the mortgage debacle of 2007 and putting you on the hook for the billions in losses coming down the road. In their frantic effort to generate the appearance of economic recovery, they are willing to gamble with taxpayers' money while luring unsuspecting blue-collar people into buying houses they cannot afford. During the previous housing bubble, greedy Wall Street bankers, deceitful mortgage brokers, and corrupt rating agencies colluded to commit the greatest control fraud in the history of mankind. This time, it is your very government itself, aided and abetted by the Federal Reserve, that is actively promoting the lending of money to people incapable of paying it back. And again, you, the taxpayer, will be on the hook when it predictably blows up. The FHA was created during the first Great Depression, and it's supposed to be self-sustaining through mortgage insurance premiums charged to homeowners in the same way that Fannie, Freddie, Medicare, Social Security, and student loan lending were supposed to be self-sustaining through taxes, fees, and interest. The FHA was supposed to promote home ownership for lower-income Americans, but it's been used by politicians as a tool to capture votes, pay off crony capitalist benefactors, and as a Keynesian stimulus tool designed to kindle a fake housing recovery. They entered the fray at the tail end of the last Fed Wall Street-created housing bubble, insuring a huge number of subprime mortgage loans from 2007 through 2009. The taxpayer already had to bail out this incompetent, politically motivated joke of an agency to the tune of $1.7 billion in 2014. Edward J. Pinto, a former Fannie Mae official, estimates that under standard accounting practices, the agency is already insolvent to the tune of $25 billion. Mark-to-fantasy accounting hasn't just benefited the criminal Wall Street cabal, but also the bloated pig government housing agencies, Fannie, Freddie, and the FHA. The FHA's share of new loans with mortgage insurance stood at 16.4% in 2005 and currently stands at 44.3%. This is a ridiculously high level, considering the percentage of first-time homebuyers is near all-time lows and low-income buyers have lower real median household income than they had in 2005. Distinguished Congresswoman Maxine Waters once declared, "We do not have a crisis at Freddie Mac and particularly Fannie Mae. Under the outstanding leadership of Frank Raines." And that was just before they imploded and cost taxpayers $187 billion in losses. Well, she thinks the FHA is doing a bang-up job. her financial acumen is unquestioned, so you can expect another bailout in the near future. Quote, above all, we must strive to have a healthy, viable FHA that can continue to facilitate home ownership for first-time and low-income homebuyers while standing ready in the unfortunate event of another housing downturn. End of quote. So, you've got politically motivated government apparatchiks insuring subprime mortgages with down payments of 3.5%, using weak underwriting standards, easing restrictions on borrowers with past foreclosures in a housing market poised to drop by 20%. How could they possibly go wrong when this next Fed Wall Street housing bubble pops? The entire false housing recovery has driven average home prices up 30% since 2012, and it's been driven on the high end by the Wall Street hedge fund buy foreclosures in bulk and rent scheme, along with hot money cash from Chinese and Russian oligarchs, while the low end is being propped up by Fannie, Freddie, and the FHA with their brilliant idea to insure 3.5% down payment mortgages to future foreclosure aspirants. We have the employment to population ratio at 35-year lows. We have had stagnant real wage growth since 2008, as low-paying service Obama jobs have replaced higher-paying production jobs. We have real median household income at 1989 levels and still 9% below the 2008 peak. We have mortgage applications 56% below the 2005 peak and hovering at 1996 levels. We still have 4 million homeowners underwater in their mortgages. We have housing starts languishing 40% below the long-term average. We have the home ownership rate of 63.8% at quarter of a century lows. We have mortgage rates at all-time lows. And we have home prices soaring far above the inflation rate and wages because the Federal Reserve, in collaboration with the federal government, decided to create another housing bubble, along with the stock and bond bubbles, to rectify the disastrous consequences of their last housing bubble. This is the absolute perfect point in time when the FHA thinks it is necessary for them to lure low-income, low-IQ, credit-challenged dupes into the housing market. Risky mortgages are increasingly being underwritten by thinly capitalized non-banks and guaranteed by the FHA. In 2012, the large Wall Street banks represented 65.4% of FHA-backed loans. That number is now 29.6%, as even the risk-seeking Wall Street criminal banks have come to their senses and realize loaning money to people that won't be able to pay them will end badly again. In their place, dodgy mortgage brokers, that's non-banks, now represent 62.2% of the FHA lending. Of course, once these low-life mortgage brokers make the loans, Wall Street will package them, get a AAA rating from their bitches at S&P or Moody's, and then peddle them to yield-seeking pension plans and life insurance companies. Sound familiar? If you thought the FHA was supposed to help young, employed, first-time homebuyers who have a limited credit history, you would be badly mistaken. There's a reason first-time homebuyers only make up 29% of all homebuyers, near the all-time low. Over history, when the housing market was not being manipulated by warped Federal Reserve monetary policies and government intervention, first-time home buyers accounted for 40 to 45% of all home sales. Even with all-time low mortgage rates, courtesy of the Fed's zero interest rate policy, the lack of jobs, crushing student loan debt, low wages, and overpriced homes have kept traditional young buyers out of the market. But the FHA's goal is to convince anyone who can fog a mirror to get into the housing market before it's too late. To get some perspective on how the FHA is actively creating the next multi-billion dollar tax bailout, you need to understand FICO credit scoring. Here are the categories. Excellent credit, 781 to 850. Good credit, 661 to 780. Fair credit, 601 to 660. Poor credit, 501 to 600. Bad credit, below 500. The average FICO score of all Americans is 687, barely above the fair credit level. The average for Americans getting a mortgage is 724, down from 750 in 2012, as the reckless mortgage brokers have taken share from the banks. It is only rational that people with good credit could be the only people borrowing hundreds of thousands of dollars for 30 years. Not in the eyes of the FHA and their politician overseers, who buy votes by doling out free shit to their constituents. Why not houses? You can get an FHA loan with a credit score as low as 500, so long as you have a 10% down payment. And once you hit a 580 credit score, you only need a 3.5% down payment. Credit scores below 600 mean that you have significant derogatory information on your credit report. In other words, you've proven to be a deadbeat. Credit scores below 600 are the result of missing multiple payments on credit cards and auto loans, having multiple collection items or judgments, and potentially having a very recent bankruptcy or foreclosure. Sounds like someone I'd really want to loan money to. After financial institutions lost hundreds of billions, covered by American taxpayers at the point of a gun through TARP, by peddling low or no down payment mortgages for $500,000 mansions to deadbeats with no willingness or means of repaying, the percentage of low down payment mortgages rationally plunged from 77 to 60% for first-time buyers. Low down payment mortgage loans are a high-risk proposition. It wasn't that long ago when a borrower had to put up 10 to 20%. If you can't save enough for a 10% down payment, then you probably shouldn't own a house. If your down payment is less than 8%, you are immediately underwater, as the costs to sell a home usually total 8% of the selling price. The percentage of first-time buyer mortgages with a low down payment mortgage has risen to 66% in the last year and is headed higher, as the FHA is pushing hard on their 3.5% down payment loans. As a general risk guideline, your monthly mortgage payment, including principal, interest, real estate taxes, and homeowners insurance, should not exceed 28% of your gross monthly income. Total debt to income generally cannot exceed 43% of your gross monthly income. These guidelines have worked for decades in assessing whether a borrower can afford a mortgage. Why would an arrogant bureaucratic agency controlled by politicians like Mel Watt and Maxine Waters follow standard industry risk standards when they're only gambling with taxpayer funds. The FHA is exempt from the qualified mortgage requirement of a 43% debt-to-income ratio. Many loans have a debt-to-income ratio above 55%. Even worse, the FHA only looks at mortgage payments in their calculation. What do you think the odds are of a borrower with a 580 credit score making $3,000 a month with a $1,500 monthly mortgage payment of defaulting? They would be high under normal circumstances and will be off the charts after the next financial bubble bursts and millions are put out of work again. People who are serial defaulters with 580 credit scores cannot expect to get the lowest rates. They should expect to see interest rates that are at least 3% higher than interest rates awarded to borrowers with good credit. Even the 3.5% down payment requirement is flexible for the FHA. The FHA is perfectly willing to accept a gift or inheritance as a down payment. So you could have no savings, a 580 FICO, a 50% debt-to-income ratio, and a gift from your parents, and that would be sufficient to get you a loan. And it gets better. The transaction can be designed with the buyer paying a higher price, but getting a credit for closing costs that covers the 3.5% down payment and other fees. Therefore, a serial deadbeat can purchase a house with a government guarantee without putting up one dime of their own cash. Sounds like a great deal for the taxpayer. I actually know of someone who has personal experience with a current FHA mortgage transaction, and his 79-year-old widowed mother is in the midst of selling the 900-square-foot row home she's lived in for 58 years in the first ring of suburbs outside Philadelphia. It was once a vibrant middle-class neighborhood of working people, but it's been gradually decaying as the old guard dies off and is replaced by lower-class Section 8 tenants. She is selling 10 years too late, as prices have dropped 30% since 2005. She asked $72,900 and received an offer within 2 weeks of $66,000 with a $4,000 closing credit. The siblings didn't expect her to get an offer in the 60s, as the dump next door was sold for $30,000 and went Section 8 a couple of years ago. Anyone buying this house is destined for another 30% loss over the next 10 years. So she was advised to take the offer before it was too late. The family met the realtor at her house after work a couple of weeks ago. They sat around the dining room table that had seen so many family gatherings over the last half century and discussed the particulars of the deal and the buyer's background. It was an enlightening glimpse into the federal government's futile attempt to engineer a housing recovery on the backs of hard-working taxpayers with good credit. The buyer is a 20-something guy living with his parents and a girlfriend and a young kid. He reportedly makes $29,000 a year. His girlfriend was not on the mortgage application. The only logical explanation is she has bad credit. He's putting 3.5% down and getting an FHA guaranteed mortgage. The $4,000 closing credit will cover his 3.5% down payment and closing costs. He evidently has no money to put down when purchasing his home. That sounds promising, doesn't it? As a high-risk borrower, he will be lucky to get a 5.5% rate mortgage. In a world where risk mattered, it should be 7.5%. He should thank Ben and Janet for encouraging this type of malinvestment across the country, with their 0% interest rate policy. His monthly cost to own this home would be approximately $800, or about 33% of his monthly gross income. Of course, no one brings home their gross income. The $800 would be about 40% of his take-home pay after taxes. He did apparently arrive at the house in a nice car, so it's very likely he has at least one auto loan of $20,000 or more. If he doesn't have a dime to put down on the house, he's likely acting like a true American and rolling a $10,000 credit card balance at 17% interest. His total debt payments, assuming a six-year auto loan at 3% and making the minimum payments on his credit card, would total at least 55% of his monthly gross income. Luckily for him, the FHA doesn't worry about his non-mortgage debt payments. So this guy comes home each month with about $2,000 of income and pays out $1,300 in debt payments, leaving him $700 to pay for health insurance, food, utilities, cable, cell phones, entertainment, and any vices he and his baby mama may have. Ladies and gentlemen, if this isn't a recipe for default, I don't know what is. No bank in their right mind would loan this man $66,000 for 30 years at 5.5%. That's where the crooked non-bank mortgage companies enter the scene, just as they did when their patron saint, Angelo, the tan man Mozzillo, was roaming the land, doling out billions in subprime mortgages while cashing in his stock options in 2005. Remember back in the glory days from 2002 through 2007, when mortgage company fronts, staffed by used car salesmen, pizza delivery guys, and convicted criminals, peddled no-doc, negative amortization, liar loan, subprime slime to every Juan, Bubba, and Lakeisha, filling the derivative pipeline for Wall Street to destroy the financial system? They're back! These parasites don't worry about individual risk, financial risk, or systemic risk. They care about upfront fees and their ability to package their toxic subprime mortgages and dump the risk on someone else before it all blows up again. They're willing to issue mortgages to people unlikely to repay because there's a big difference between the risk that faces the company and the risk that faces the blood-sucking founder of the mortgage front. It's a perfect opportunity for shysters and scumbags. You set up a mortgage company and take extraordinarily opulent commissions on all loans you book. In this Fed-created paradise of low interest rates, investors are desperate for yield. An FHA loan provides the opportunity for an investor to receive a good yield and a guarantee from the federal government, also known as you, the taxpayer. The conscienceless CEO and executives of these MBS machines revel in the vast commission revenue as the loans are booked. These companies retain little or no capital on their balance sheets. Instead, they pay dividends to the owners as quickly as possible before the bottom drops out. When the next Fed-induced financial crisis happens, the mortgage company will go bankrupt, but the slimy owners will walk away unscathed. These fly-by-night operations are booking as much business as possible before the music stops, at which point the taxpayer will be on the hook again, as the FHA will need a $20 to $50 billion bailout. The FHA is flying under the radar, still in the shadow of equally insolvent Fannie and Freddie. Their mission is supposedly to help lower-income people achieve the American dream. But their politically motivated actions today will lead to millions of borrowers experiencing an American nightmare and taxpayers footing the bill for their crackpot Keynesian scheme, aided and abetted by the Janet Yellen and her Fed cronies. The FHA has $64 billion of liabilities on their balance sheet, supported by $3 billion of capital. They are currently accelerating their guarantees to subprime borrowers with 3.5% down mortgages. Fannie and Freddie will purchase mortgages with only 3% down payments. Wall Street issued $1 trillion of mortgage-backed securities last year, with the Fed buying 20% of the issuance as part of QE3. If this sounds like a replay of the waning days of the last Fed-induced housing bubble, it's because it is. Both debacles have been fueled by the malinvestment created by an easy money, excessively low interest rate environment designed to benefit bankers, billionaires, politicians, and mega corporations. The Fed already has $1.7 trillion of Wall Street-generated toxic mortgage debt on its bloated balance sheet. By the time this imminent catastrophe runs its course, there'll be another $1 trillion of toxic mortgages polluting their insolvent balance sheet. To paraphrase H.L. Mencken, anyone who wants the government and Federal Reserve to create a housing recovery deserves to get it good and hard, like a 4x4 to the side of the head. Subprime mortgages, subprime auto loans, and subprime student loans driven by preposterously low interest rates are the liquefying foundation of this fake economic recovery. Most rational people would agree that loaning money to people who will eventually default is not a good idea. But it is the underpinning of everything the Fed and government apparatchiks have done to keep this farce going a little while longer. It will not end well. Again. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, let me give you my information, as I am wont to do at approximately halfway through the show. It comes as follows. The email address to which you should write in your questions, your rants, your observations, and anything else that tickles your fancy is rm@gfawd.com. That's again my email address, rm for Richard Martin, @gfawd for Global Financial Advisory Wealth Design .com. Let me give it to you one more time. Write in. Of course, this is not a live show, so I can't immediately hand it back to you with an answer, but I promise to get to it as soon as I can, as I do. So once more, the email address, rm@gfawd.com. Okay, and the phone number, my direct line. And by the way, I should apologize. I have a very nasty head cold, mostly gone by now, but still I'm struggling with this, and so I do apologize for all the sniffles and coughs and everything that's going on right now. Hopefully I'll make it through the end of the show. But, okay, so my phone number to call if you should have any questions of a personal nature pertaining to your financial and economic lives, please feel free to call me at my office number in Sarasota, Florida, at area code 941-441-1682. Again, that's 941-441-1682. And now, if you would bear with me just one tiny moment, I will be right with you. Uh, Right, we are back, ladies and gentlemen. Well, I've seen many grim predictions regarding robots taking away human jobs, but one of the most dire predictions comes from a study commissioned by ING DiBa. The study claims that 59% of Germany's workforce could be replaced by machines and software in the coming decades. The results of the ING DiBa study paint an almost doomsday-esque scenario for Germany. The report claims that almost two-thirds of its workforce will be unemployed. Of the 30.9 million people currently in full or part-time employment in Germany, 18 million will be made redundant by improved technology. The study looked into the effect that advancing technology will have on the workplace in several European countries, including Finland and the Netherlands, but it was Germany that came out the worst. The report argues that this is the price Germany will pay for its strong industrial sector. Factory workers and the administrative army behind global giants such as Volkswagen and BMW will soon become superfluous as advanced algorithms and sophisticated machinery are developed which can do their jobs faster and more efficiently. The study suggests that administrative workers, such as secretaries, are set to have their positions almost entirely taken over by computer algorithms. 86% of them could lose their jobs to advancing technology. The news is almost as bad for mechanics, machine drivers, and mechanical technicians, over two-thirds of whom are set to have their jobs taken away from them. For the educated classes, the story is quite different. Doctors are particularly irreplaceable. In the academic classes, less than a million of the almost 4 million currently in employment need fear a certified robot taking over their practice. The story is similar for business leaders. Of the 1.4 million people who occupy this elite sector, only 160,000 would be threatened with redundancy. Carsten Breske, head of economics at ING DiBa, who co-authored the report, told Die Welt, quote-unquote, "The takeover has already begun. There are already some industrial sectors which have been completely taken over by robots." In Asia, for example, progress on robot technologies is particularly advanced. Toshiba has already developed human-looking secretarial robots which went to work in April in Tokyo, welcoming customers at an information desk at the Nihonbashi Mitsubishi main store. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. It's not only people being outsourced to other countries, it's robots outsourcing you on your very own doorstep. Well, let me invoke a historical image, which comes from research work by Harvard's Thomas Bulfinch, who lived from 1796 to 1867. He is the iconic expert on mythology. He wrote, and I quote, "It will be necessary to acquaint ourselves with the ideas and the structure of the universe which prevailed among the Greeks, the people from whom the Romans and other nations through them received their science and religion. The Greeks believed the earth to be flat and circular, their own country occupying the middle of it, the central point being either Mount Olympus, the abode of the gods, or Delphi, so famous for its oracle. The circular disk of the earth crossed from west to east and divided into two equal parts by the sea, as they are called the Mediterranean, and its continuation, the Euxine, the only seas with which they were acquainted. Around the earth flowed the river Ocean, its course being from south to north on the western side of the earth, and in a contrary direction on the eastern side. It flowed in a steady, equable current, unvexed by storm or tempest. The sea and all the rivers on earth received their waters from it. The northern portion of the earth was supposed to be inhabited by a happy race named Hyperboreans, dwelling in everlasting bliss and spring beyond the lofty mountains, whole caverns were supposed to send forth the piercing blasts of the north wind, which chilled the people of Hellas or Greece. Their country was inaccessible by land or sea. They lived exempt from disease or old age, from toils and warfare. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I will be coming to you with another rather longer story of what was generally considered to be socially acceptable knowledge, which turned out not to be the case, in a few weeks or days, depending on how much important material supersedes it. It's ready to go. But you will see the importance of disavowing even material which seems to be utterly unsuspected and proven to be the case by very renowned scientists and other such people. But we will get to that in a while, just to let you know that Greece has a history of such things, which may give them, unfortunately, a skewed impression of their own place in the world. Well, the number of publicly traded companies declaring bankruptcy has reached a five-year high. Chinese exports are totally collapsing, and Chinese economic growth in 2014 was the weakest in over 20 years. Even though things seem to be okay on the surface for the global economy at the moment, but big trouble is percolating just under the surface. Last Wednesday, investors cheered as stocks soared to new highs, but almost all of the economic news coming in from all over the world has been bad. The credit rating on Greek debt has been slashed again. Global economic trade is really slowing down. And many of the exact same financial patterns that we saw just before the crash of 2008 are repeating once again. All this reminds me of the month leading up to the implosion of Lehman Brothers. Most people were feeling really good about things, but huge trouble was brewing just underneath the surface. Finally, one day we learnt that Lehman Brothers had suddenly collapsed, and then all hell broke loose. If the economy is actually getting better, like we are being told by the establishment media, then why are so many big companies declaring bankruptcy? According to CNBC, the number of publicly traded companies declaring bankruptcy has hit a five-year high. The number of bankruptcies among publicly traded U.S. companies has climbed to the highest first quarter level for 5 years, according to a Reuters analysis from data of research firm bankruptcompanynews.com. Plunging prices of crude oil and other commodities is one of the major reasons for the increased filings, and bankruptcy experts said a more aggressive stance by lenders may also be hurting some companies. It's interesting to note that the price of oil is being named as one of the primary reasons why this is happening. As I said last Friday, if the price of oil doesn't bounce back in a huge way, we're going to see a lot more companies going bankrupt, a lot more people losing their jobs, and a lot more corporate debt going bad. And of course, the recent oil crash has not just hurt the United States. All over the world, economic activity is being curtailed because of what's happened to the price of oil. In the heady days of the commodity boom, oil-rich nations accumulated billions of dollars in reserves they invested in U.S. and debt and other securities. They also occasionally bought trophy assets, such as Manhattan skyscrapers, luxury homes in London, or Paris Saint-Germain football club. Now that oil prices have dropped by half to $50 a barrel, Saudi Arabia and other commodity-rich nations are fast drawing down those petrodollar reserves. Some nations, such as Angola, are burning through their savings at a record pace, removing a source of liquidity from global markets. If oil and other commodity prices remain depressed, the trend will cut demand for everything from European government debt to U.S. real estate, as producing nations seek to fill holes in their domestic budgets. But it isn't just oil. We appear to be moving into a time when things are slowing down everywhere. In a recent article, Zero Hedge summarized some of the bad economic news that's coming in just this week. Mortgage apps tumble. Empire Fed slumps. And now industrial production plunges. Against expectations of a 0.3% drop month over month, U.S. factory output was twice as bad, at minus 0.6%, the worst since August 2012, and almost the worst since June 2009. This is the fourth miss in a row. If we are indeed heading into another economic downturn, that is really bad news, because even now we're in far worse shape than we were just prior to the last recession. After you adjust for inflation, median income for the middle class is the lowest that it has been in decades. Median net worth for the middle class is also the lowest it's been in decades after you adjust for inflation. The middle class is being systematically destroyed. And now we are on the verge of another major economic slowdown. We're also getting some very disturbing economic news from China. In 2014, economic growth in China was the weakest in more than 20 years, and Chinese export numbers are absolutely collapsing. China's monthly trade data shows exports fell in March from a year ago by 14.6% in yuan terms, compared with expectations for a rise of more than 8%. Imports, meanwhile, fell 12.3% in yuan terms, compared to forecasts for a fall of more than 11%. This is a clear sign that global economic activity is slowing down in a big way. In addition, Chinese home prices are now falling at a faster pace than the fall of U.S. home prices during the subprime mortgage meltdown. It appeared as though things went from bad to worse nearly overnight. China's National Bureau of Statistics said that, contrary to hopes that there would be a modest rebound, the average new home price in China fell at the fastest pace on record in February from the previous year. Reuters reported that average new home prices in China's 70 major cities fell 5.7% year-to-year in February, marking the sixth consecutive drop after January's decline of 5.1%. Things continue to get worse in Europe as well. This week we learnt that the credit rating for Greek government debt has been slashed once again. Standard & Poor's has just cut Greece's credit rating to CCC+, from B- with a negative outlook. S&P said it expected Greece's debt to be, quote-unquote, unsustainable. It cited the potential for dissolving liquidity in the government, banks, and economy. And according to the Financial Times, we could actually be on the verge of witnessing a Greek debt default. Greece is preparing to take the dramatic step of declaring a debt default unless it can reach a deal with its international creditors by the end of April or May, according to people briefed on the radical leftist government's thinking. The government is rapidly running out of funds to pay public sector salaries and state pensions, and so it has decided to withhold 2.5 billion euros of payments due to the International Monetary Fund in May and June if no agreement is struck, they said. Huge trouble is percolating just under the surface of the global economy, and it won't be too long before the financial markets start feeling the pain. All right, so let us now take a couple of emails. The first one comes from David Walsh. Obama is the classic example of our time. What he writes up on his can is never what he actually intends or does. He tells the American people he is representing them and his interests, but nothing could be further from the truth. Obama is acting for the interests of the Western banking and industrial elites, the oligarchs who own and run the Western system, and him. What a fraud that guy is. They all are. David. Well, thank you, David. Useful piece of information for us. Now I get a strangest email, one of the strangest I've ever had. So I've no idea who wrote this, but I can do no better than simply to read it to you. I truly have no idea who is behind this. It starts, "Hello, Richard. Let me get this out of the way first. I have created this identity so you will not reveal my name on the air. I forgot to mention this the last time I emailed you, and you announced my name as if I were seeking attention. I am, on the other hand, seeking to receive no attention to myself whatsoever, quite the contrary. Captain Mango is a fictional superhero dedicated to fighting stupidity and ignorance here in Latin America, and with your help around the world. Although the term Mango is slang for someone who is a homosexual, I assure you Captain Mango is heterosexual. In a previous email, you had wondered on the air if I had attended Johnny Miller's Expat Wisdom Seminar. As a matter of fact, I had been seen at or around four of these seminars. I have moved here to Latin America after my first seminar and have become involved in several businesses. The Expat Wisdom Latin American Seminar is always a delightful and extraordinary experience. In the U.S., if you have a mechanic shop, you are visited regularly by a tool man, be it from Snap-on or Mac Tools, etc. They have a regular route and can supply any and every tool one can imagine. Johnny is the snap-on man for expats who wish to locate in Latin America. He has all the tools you may need to utilize your gringo advantage off the tourist trail. I implore you to come to the next seminar to see for yourself. A successful man of your stature can surely get away for a couple of weeks. Here is my suggestion. Go to Spain or Italy for a couple of days, get some sun, then on to Guatemala. This way, it would ease the jet lag and make your trip more relaxing. When the seminar is in progress, it is a whirlwind of activity and boots-on-the-ground learning. The attendees are generally like-minded folks who always have much to offer, most of whom are wake-up call loyal listeners. You talk the talk, Richard. Now it's time to walk the walk with some of the true believers. I guarantee you will have a wonderful and memorable experience. I look forward to seeing you here in July. Captain Mango." Well, Captain, thank you very much for the invitation. I regret I will be unable to avail myself of the good idea, and I like the idea of some time spent in Italy or Spain as well, so it's all very alluring, but unfortunately it is not to be. But thank you anyway for the entertainment. Well, a world first is in the making, ladies and gentlemen. A new bill coming before Parliament in Australia would require everyone to pay tax on the money in their bank accounts. Everyone who has any savings would have to pay taxes on their savings. The measure is expected to serve as a global test balloon for Europe and North America. We'll watch the outcome in Australia. If there will be no massive resistance of Australian savers, the rest of the world should expect this outright confiscation very rapidly. It will only be more money in the pockets of corrupt and seriously deranged politicians who are destroying Western civilization piece by piece. Well, you know, the weight of America's debt, just to name one thing, has kept it from turning that corner for 7 to 8 years now, and that weight is getting more forbidding, not less. Publishing failing unemployment numbers while out of labor force data rise to a record 93 million working age Americans today is an insult to everyone's intelligence, not a sign of economic health. Whatever is seen as recovery or expansion is a testament to the power of illusion and propaganda, not the power of the economy. If you choose to look at the world from a point of view that focuses only on recovery, you're not going to understand what is happening, because there is no recovery anywhere in sight. The entire mafia apparatus is geared towards selling you a doctored image of the world you live in, instead of presenting you with reality. Not because, as Jack Nicholson said, you can't handle the truth, but because you knowing the truth is not in the interests of those who run governments, nations, and supranational organizations. You're caught in a trap somewhere between Goebbels and Orwell, and it takes a lot of energy to escape it. Well, Ben Bernanke's skin is as thin, apparently, as is his comprehension of honest economics. The emphasis is on the honest part, because he is a fount of the kind of Keynesian drivel that passes for economics in the financially deformed world that Bernanke did so much to bring about. Just recall that he first joined the Fed way back in 2002, after an academic career of scribbling historically superficial and blatantly misleading monographs about the 1930s. These were essentially Xeroxed from Milton Friedman's monumental error about the cause of the Great Depression. In a word, Friedman and Bernanke pilloried the Fed for not going on a bond-buying spree during the 1930-1932 era, and thereby stopping the shrinkage of money and credit. In fact, excess reserves in the banking system soared by 12 times during those 4 years. Interest rates were at rock bottom, and the US economy was saturated with idle cash. So there was no financial stringency, not the remotest aspect of a great monetary policy error. Instead, what actually happened was that the U.S. banking system was massively insolvent after a 12-year credit boom fueled by the Fed's printing presses. This first great credit bubble arose initially from the Fed's maneuvers to fund the massive war production surge of 1915 to 1919, and then from its fostering of a vast domestic and international credit bubble during the Roaring Twenties. Alas, none of the Fed governors during the 1930-1932 credit contraction had graced the lecture halls of Princeton. But to nearly a man, they knew you can't push on a string, and that a healthy economy requires that busted loans and soured expectations and speculations must be purged from the financial system in order for sustainable growth to resume. Bernanke has never had a clue about this truth. Well, ladies and gentlemen, with that, I am going to call it a day. We have had a nice time together. I have enjoyed our little twice-weekly sojourn in the waves of the internet together. And I shall be back, as always, with another edition of the same next Monday. And until then, I wish you all a wonderful weekend ahead. And this is Richard Martin saying bye-bye to them.